What's going on, everyone? My name is James Q. Quick, and I am a JavaScript developer and teacher.
What's up? My name is Amy Dutton. I'm a senior UI UX designer and front-end developer.
Welcome to the Compressed FM podcast, a podcast all about web design and development with a little bit of zest.
So today's episode is all about my website, selfteach.me. We're going to be talking about the stack and technology behind it. So we're going to have a caged death match talking about Next.js insanity versus Gatsby and Markdown, because I actually built the site twice using both technologies. So we'll talk about the pros and cons of each. Then for the front end, for the CSS side, it's built with Tailwind CSS, if you've heard of that. It's kind of a controversial framework right now, and we'll talk about why. Then I'll also talk about forms, because you have to handle those a little bit differently when you're dealing with Next.js and Gatsby. And then the last piece that we'll touch on is marketing. Sprinkle in a little bit of the special sauce behind the site. Without further ado.
Web development and design, who would have guessed? Well, we can do them both, even add a little zest. So turn up the volume, get ready for the best. Let's get it started in this episode of Compress.
Today, we're joined by three great sponsors. Vercel, they will meet all of your hosting needs. Zeal, a software consultancy that's hiring. And Quez Forms, build any form on any platform with low code. More from all of these later in the show. James, what have you been up to?
Well, I got to do something really fun last night. My wife has played in two soccer games, hasn't played in over a year. That's something that we have played co-ed together for probably 10 plus years. She got to play last night and I got to go watch her play, which is really special, not only to see her play, but also because a lot of the people that she plays with were all friends together. So I got to see a lot of my friends that I hadn't seen in over a year. So that was really neat. Hopefully we get to do more and more of that stuff as COVID maybe slowly fades into the background. We'll see how it goes.
I hope so.
Yeah. What have you been up to?
I have been drinking on some pretty big projects at work. One of the things I thought that might be fun to talk about, there was one project where I did a little bit of theming, essentially. It's a larger corporation and they have these sub-brands and they wanted to make it feel like it has its own site, even though it's technically all pulling in the same content. It's just skinned differently. So I was pretty excited about how I ended up setting that up with CSS. So with CSS variables, because they are scoped, I basically just had four lines of CSS that just outlined the colors, and that's driving the entire theme. Super simple. And the best part is if they decide to add another sub brand, they just add four lines of code and they have all the colors for the next site. So I was pretty excited about that.
Nice. I got asked on a webinar, podcast, something recently, or maybe it was a panel. Do you have some tips to make your style flexible, I guess, or how do you adjust your colors? And immediately CSS variables, if you just put them in there, keep those, then you can just swap them out. It's the same reason you have variables in JavaScript or any programming language. But that's really neat. I'm glad that you're able to do that and have a pretty cool setup, it sounds like, with the CSS variables.
For sure. And for anybody that's listening, like I said, the difference between CSS variables and say SAS variables is that CSS variables are scoped. So I can say these variables only apply when this class is applied. And so that worked out well with the sub brand, because I just applied a class to the body tag and that controlled all the colors.
Nice.
Today, I'm excited to talk to you about my website, selfteach.me. I'm using this site to help teach designers how to develop and developers how to design. And this is really just a side project. My real job is a UI UX designer and front-end developer at Zeal. And heyo, Zeal is a sponsor of our podcast. I wanted to take a brief moment and talk about Zeal as our sponsor, but also share about how they have an extra special place in my heart, not only because I'm employed by them, but because they have been so supportive of my side project, both selfteach.me and compress.fm. But I think that speaks to who they are. Most companies don't want you to have any side projects at all. And here, Zeal is encouraging them. So I can honestly say that Zeal is the best company that I've ever worked for, and you can work for them too. If you have experience in Rails, React, or design, they are currently hiring. So if you're looking for a job, I'd encourage you to check out their website and the job listing and apply. Plus, you get the added bonus of working with me. So special thanks to Zeal for being a Compress.fm sponsor.
Well, as we get into your tech stack, I think for people that maybe have checked out either episode 3, which is the Compressed FM tech stack, and or episode 8, which was my site tech stack, you'll probably see a lot of similarities, but I'm really interested in the cage death match that you pitched of the Gatsby and MDX versus Next.js and Sanity. So I think we'll have enough differences here for you to talk about and hopefully give some people some extra insights into the pros and cons of the different ones that we talk about.
Yeah. So I just really wanted to talk about why I landed on the direction that I did. I know there's tons of technology options out there that you can pick from. And so sometimes it's hard to narrow down what should I invest my time in? What's the best tech stack? And the great thing about a personal site is that you have the flexibility to make those choices. You're not relying on a client trying to drive that, or in some cases, a tech team speaking into that. And it really gives you the flexibility to be able to try these different options. So that's what I did with this. My first iteration of the site was built on WordPress. And at the time, this made sense. I was doing freelance full time and basically developing custom themes almost exclusively on WordPress. And WordPress has a lot of things going for it. For one, it's free, it's open source, it powers a third of the internet. The community is large and engaged. It's been around for a while. It's not going anywhere. But we talked about this when we talked about James's site stack in episode 8, but there are a few pain points that come along with WordPress. So there's the database issue, trying to keep everything in sync between your local machine and production. Depending on how many plugins you're using, WordPress can get slow. So at the time, Gatsby was really popular, and I decided to see what all the excitement was about it. So I rebuilt the site on Gatsby and with MDX. If you have never heard of MDX, it is very similar to Markdown, except it allows you to include React components directly within your Markdown files, which has a lot of power to it. And for me, that was really interesting. I wanted to be able to have complete control over the styling. I thought that would be a good way to go. Plus, if anyone wanted to issue a pull request, say there's a typo or the content needed to be updated, somebody could do that through GitHub and just issue a pull request. It's called forking, but they basically make a copy of my site and they would make the change that they want. And then they essentially send me a note saying, hey, I made this change. Will you pull this? Will you make a pull request to pull this into your site code? So that seemed really interesting to me. And I liked the idea of the content being mine. So with WordPress, you're putting your content within their database. And so if you ever want to move off of that, you've got to pull the content out of the database. So the idea that I would just have these static files and that content's mine and living on the repo is really interesting. With Gatsby, so it's a static site generator, and it really gives your site a lot of speed. If you've seen anybody talk in depth about Gatsby, they're posting their Lighthouse scores. And a Lighthouse is just a number that says, hey, your site's really fast. These are things that you can improve on. And honestly, it's just kind of a funny number. Some of those things make a lot of sense to speed up your site, but some of them don't. And with WordPress, just because of the way that it handles things, you don't always have control over that score. And so I like the idea of trying to make the site as fast as possible to hopefully get a better ranking within Google.
Same experience with me with WordPress sites. Well, one, I think we have the same pain points that you've already talked about, but definitely the speed was something that never was on par, especially after moving to a statically generated site, was just never on par with that. And I think there's something you'll get into in a second, which is you shift the lack of speed that you have in WordPress that happens real time. Someone comes to look at a blog post, it goes to a database, it gets it, it then renders HTML based on that. You shift that in the statically generated site world to build time. So you go through this build process to have all these static assets for each of your blog posts or whatever pages you want. So yeah, so what were some of the problems when you got into the Gatsby world in terms of those limitations that maybe had you thinking maybe there's a different way to go instead of Gatsby?
Yeah, MDX seemed really great at the time, but I did run into a few limitations that were frustrating. They weren't insurmountable, but they did pose a few tricky scenarios. So for example, you can't pass Markdown into a React component because it doesn't recognize that as Markdown. It actually sees it as text. Passing images in is also a little weird because then you start trying to handle paths. Like, so your relative path, is that coming from your Markdown file or from the root of the file? It gets a little confusing, a little hairy. But the ultimate pain point that really caused me to explore a different option was the build times that I was getting with Gatsby. I had it hosted on Netlify, and we'll talk a little bit more about hosting later, but I was maxing out their build time so that it wouldn't finish building. I just have, I think, more images on my site than maybe most developers, but it was just really frustrating that I would say, try and send it off for a build, and 15 minutes later, it would crash, and I'd have to troubleshoot it, send it off, wait another 15 minutes. So the developer experience there was not stellar by any stretch of the imagination. And even locally, I was constantly having to start and stop my local builds.
Yeah, so I just wanted to clarify, with those build minutes in Netlify, I forget what the exact number is, but on the free tier, which I think is like a developer's dream, right, is to have all this stuff and have it be hosted for free. There's a certain number of minutes that can be used to actually run build processes. So you're saying that you actually went above that number in a given month. And so you were almost shut down if you didn't have minutes to do builds unless you paid for a higher tier in Netlify. Is that right?
They also have minutes for an individual build. So they want an individual build to be under 15 minutes. So it wasn't that I had necessarily hit my monthly limit. It was that I hit my individual build limit.
Wow. Yeah. And for what it's worth, I still have some of that to figure out on my site. I feel like my Gatsby builds are much too slow for what they are. So that's something I'm looking into fixing sometime in the next year on my personal site as well.
And for what it's worth, Gatsby has improved some of these things from what I've heard. They have Gatsby Cloud now that allows you to do iterative builds. So that means it's not going to try and rebuild your entire project if it noticed that only one file changed. And they also have a new way of handling images that may have made that problem go away by itself. But at the time, that wasn't available. So I decided to move to Sanity for Content. So that's putting all those MDX files into their database system. As I was making that change, I also decided to move to Next.js. When I was exploring this change, I looked at several different headless CMS options. So I looked at Strapi and Prismic and Contentful, and Netlify actually even has their own CMS. But ultimately, the big differentiator for me was Sanity's portable text. And in some ways, it's actually similar to MDX in that you can create these custom React components and inject them into your WYSIWYG editor, just like you would a normal image or an anchor link or whatever, but you get to decide what that content looks like. So I have more control over the formatting, whether that's two columns of text, an image on the left, text on the right, vice versa. There's a lot more options there.
And WYSIWYG, just for those of you who may not actually know the acronym, is what you see is what you get editor. WordPress is probably one of the most common of these. Like now there's tons of different options for that kind of stuff, but it allows you to do different headers, bullet points, bold, underline, images, all that kind of stuff you said. And so you're saying, like, looking at Sanity.io and your ability to customize what those different components in theory were that you can inject into your content, that was the big thing that you were sold on that made you really like Sanity.
That's right. So if anybody is from the WordPress world and is thinking, how does this language translate? You can think of it like a short code. You're injecting something within those square brackets. Or I think WordPress has stuff with the Gutenberg editor where you can stick a YouTube video or a code pen example in there. But with portable text, you can do all that and have control over how all that looks through React components, which is really interesting. Then for the front end, I used Next.js, and I'd worked with Next.js on another project before, so it seemed like an easy choice since I was already familiar with that setup.
We've talked about on the show, we both are big fans of Next.js. I've done a lot of content in Next.js. Going back to the comparison of Gatsby and Next, did you find any other benefits from moving from Gatsby to Next in terms of like build time or like setting up your application, querying data, anything like that?
Yeah, 100%. So with Next.js, the process was seamless. I did not have to restart the server nearly as many times. It just seemed like things work. And the nice thing about Next.js, and this is a huge differentiator between how they handle their code and Gatsby, is that Next.js, you can have statically generated pages, but you can also go to the server and dynamically grab content. Just depends on whatever's on that page. So there's a huge benefit there in terms of interactivity and the elements that you're able to build.
Yeah, that was the big interest for me of leveraging server-side rendering real time, like you said. So you can actually do something in architecture similar to the way WordPress was. Like, again, someone comes to a post, instead of having that page pre-generated, you could go to the database, get the information, render the markup that goes back down to the browser. But you have the ability to do everything that Gatsby could do as well with statically generated pages. So that was definitely the big thing for me of just having that extra bit of functionality in addition to whatever you could do with Gatsby. Another thing that I really liked is, well, not only do they have those two separate features, they're actually really easy to hook into. And in my opinion, a little bit easier to hook into than Gatsby. Gatsby's so tightly integrated with the GraphQL ecosystem, and Gatsby has amazing set of plugins that make a lot of things just much quicker to get started. But having to learn GraphQL or just like throw yourself into that ecosystem for me was a little jarring. In Next.js, you basically write a function, and then inside that function, you can get the data however you want. You can use GraphQL, you can use Grok as the query language for Sanity.io, you can make REST requests, whatever you need to do, you can do. It's not as opinionated, I think, in a way it was good for me. Like, again, people that have experience with GraphQL, I think Gatsby is an amazing option if you're already familiar with that ecosystem or you're looking to learn and get into it. But I think we've got a lot of similarities in why we now probably prefer Next a little bit more just based on our workflow and some of the features that come with it.
That's right.
And there's actually one other feature with Next.js, and I think Gatsby has something like this too. So people out there should probably go and do a little bit deeper research into these features. But Next.js supports something called static incremental builds, I think is what it is. And what that means is it can run a build at build time and go grab all of your content that's static. But then it can also periodically go and update that data, like run the query again and then see if there's any different new data. And if there is, go ahead and generate the static pages for those. So in that sense, I think one of the benefits that we talked about before with WordPress is if you publish a blog post, that thing is ready to be viewed by a user immediately because it's going to go and look in the database. If you're in a statically generated world, if you're using Gatsby, or if you're doing statically generated pages in Next, when you publish a blog post, you also have to kick off that build. So with incremental static builds, it will pick that stuff up. If you have it run this diff of a build every hour or so, it should go ahead and pick up that new content without having to do the entire build itself. Anyway, that's probably something for people to go and look into a little bit more. It's something I want to implement in my sites going forward, but I haven't gotten there yet. But thinking about this as the cage death match that we set up here of Gatsby and MDX versus Next.js and Sanity, what do you think, in your opinion, what won for you and why? And a quick recap.
Yeah, Sanity and Next.js definitely won. And a huge part of that was just the developer experience. Since I was able to just kick it off and it works, not having to constantly reset either my local server or kick off these builds, I wasn't having to worry about minutes and build times with the Netlify setup, just seemed to work. And then with Sanity, I also had the added benefit of the portable text. So when I had looked at those other headless CMS options, you know, I mentioned Strapi, Prismic, Contentful, Netlify, they all are great setups, but they didn't allow me to have the control over the display of the text like Sanity's portable text did. It was more like entering a Google Doc instead of having control over how all those pieces were formatted.
Fair enough. I think it's great that you had two completely different setups to be able to try. Like you went through that process twice and now can reflect and then share that stuff with other people as they're looking to get into it.
Yeah. And if somebody wants to experiment, I mean, the nice part about it is some of that's just copy and paste in terms of elements, because both Next.js and Gatsby use React. They're both part of that ecosystem. You can copy over a lot of those same components. It's not rewriting everything from scratch.
Agreed. Yeah. So that was a lot about your front end, your data, the framework from a functionality perspective. And then on the front end for CSS, I think you're using Tailwind CSS. What is Tailwind CSS and how has it been for you?
Yeah, so I'm using Tailwind CSS. And the main reason I went with Tailwind was because I wanted a project to try it out on. It's the best way to learn something is just to immerse yourself in an actual project and commit to it. The big differentiator between Tailwind and say Bootstrap or Zurb Foundation, if you've used those before in the past, is that Tailwind is a utility class base. So what that means is if you were to open up the Tailwind CSS, you might see P1, which means padding a quarter rem. P-1.5 is padding 0.375 rem. So we're starting to get in the weeds a little bit here, but with each item, it has a different rem number. So it have classes for P0, P1, P2, P3. You kind of get the idea. There's a lot of classes listed out in the CSS. Just to throw out another example are your colors. So gradients, for example, it would have options to go from red 500 to maybe from red 800. So that's going from a lighter red to a darker red. So you have tons of options. I think uncompressed, their CSS file is like 8 megs. It's huge. Mm-hmm. But you use Purge CSS. It's a post CSS plugin. It's smart enough to go through your code and figure out which classes you're using and which ones you're not and remove all the extra things that you don't need. So if you actually read Tailwind's documentation, Adam Wathan, the creator behind it, says, think of it like Legos. If you were to go in your closet and pour out all your Legos, you use the pieces that you need. And when you're done, you put all the pieces that you didn't want back in your closet. So that's kind of how it works with Purge CSS and Tailwind. Pull out all the classes that you need and you just get rid of everything else. It's kind of an interesting concept. If you're looking at the HTML, it looks different there too. So you might have a div that has 10 classes stringed together on that item. Whereas if it was Bootstrap, they just give you one class name that you put on that HTML element and everything kind of snaps into place.
Yeah, it does. I think that's people's biggest concern or biggest question with Tailwind is bloating the HTML, because you end up having, to your point about if you wanted to make a card with Bootstrap, you can have a div with a class of card, you can have an inner div with a class of card body and card header and that sort of stuff. And it will do things like set the padding and the border radius and the box shadow if they have one on the card or something like that. But if you're using a Tailwind CSS, you have to set all of those properties each time you want that card, and it has to be with those classes. So Bootstrap actually has some utility classes, and I think they've added a lot more in 4 and then 5. So you can do some of that stuff with Bootstrap. It's just not made to do all of your CSS with those classes. And that's what Tailwind CSS has been. I think you used the word controversial earlier. It's definitely been a debated thing about whether people like it or not. But I feel like the more people have used it, the more really positive things I've heard.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, even if you start reading the documentation, Adam says it makes you want to throw up in your mouth a little bit the first time you see it, but just to give it a shot. And that's really why I applied it to an entire project, was to give it a fair shot. I did not like the way that it looked. Didn't think that I would like the way that it looked, but at the end, I was actually pretty pleased with the end result and have put it on more projects since then. So some of the pros for using Tailwind and why people like it is that naming things in CSS is hard. Sometimes you will name something, say you'll put about on the body of the about page, but then you might have an about section on your site. We have to give that another name so that those two things aren't conflicting with each other. The other piece of it is, anytime you want to add, say, a new page, you're going to increase your CSS file because all of a sudden you're having to add more styles for that individual page. Whereas with Tailwind, you already have all these elements. You already have all your blocks and you're just reusing those utility classes. Another piece is specificity. So I think that's probably one of the most confusing things about CSS and probably why a lot of people get so frustrated with it, is because it almost seems like the rules change depending on how specific you are as you're listing out your classes. But Tailwind kind of resolves that since you're putting those classes directly on the element itself. Some of the benefits I've seen is that when you're talking about projects within a team, is that everybody's working from the same style guide. You're all using the same class names and elements. So it's a lot easier to make sure that you're not creating a component in CSS that already exists just because you didn't know that it exists. You're just using those utility classes again. And then the last piece that I would say that I really like about it is, if you ever have to remove an HTML element, I know when I've done this before on projects, I'll actually leave the CSS behind because I don't know what other pieces of the project are touching that CSS and I don't want it to break. So your CSS ends up getting bloated with a whole bunch of code that you're not really using, just in case. But with Tailwind, because those classes are attached to the div itself, if you rip out that div, the CSS comes with it. Your code base ends up being cleaner throughout the entire lifetime of that project. You're not inheriting as much tech debt.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's like having someone walking behind you and cleaning up. Like you said, you have the Lego blocks and the ones you don't use, you don't even have to choose to put them away. They just automatically get put away. I mean, I think that's really cool. So you stay pretty minimal, just including the CSS that you're actually using, not just the stuff that had been a part of your project several months ago or something like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Thinking about hosting, I know you were hosting on Netlify. We talked about some of the build times with Gatsby and Netlify with your Next.js site. Where are you hosting that?
Yeah, it's hosted on Vercel, and convenient, they're one of our sponsors. Vercel is actually the company behind Next.js. So if you're building a Next.js site, hosting your project on Vercel is a no-brainer. In fact, both the selfteach.me and the compress.fm sites are built in Next.js and hosted on Vercel. It also powers websites like Twilio and is great for e-commerce, travel, news, and marketing sites. Even though they're behind Next.js, you're not limited to Next.js. It works with 30 Jamstack frameworks, including React, Vue, Svelte, Angular, Gatsby, Hugo, Nuxt, and Ember, just to name a few. So when you sign up for an account, you'll get a dashboard that makes it easy to manage your projects. And if you have a team account, it's super easy to share and collaborate. We'll include a link in the show notes, but I hope you'll check out Vercel and Next.js. Special thanks to Vercel for being a Compress.fm sponsor. So I did want to talk a little bit more about why I went with Vercel, because I made that choice even before they were a sponsor. Originally, I had my Gatsby site on Netlify. Netlify is great. I'm a huge fan of them as well, but there's a little bit more config involved. So with Vercel, I just pointed it to the repo on GitHub, and I had my sanity code and my next.js code in there together. So I had to tell it that here's my next.js folder. So it knew where to go to grab all that, and it just worked. That was literally the entire setup. Just hit okay and it deploys. The cool part is, anytime you make a commit to master, it will automatically go to production. Or if you create a pull request, it will actually create a staging domain where you can check out that code and make sure that it looks right before you push it to production.
It's really amazing the tooling that's built into hosting platforms now.
It's crazy.
I feel like that sort of stuff was so complicated at one point, and now it just happens automatically, and it's just really nice. With me being in web development just for 4 or 5 years, just the things that have changed, the things that have gotten so much easier, it's cool to watch, it's cool to see, and it's cool to use as a developer.
Yeah. Well, the fact that GitHub connects into a lot of these hosting mm-hmm. systems makes a world of difference. Yep. Because 15 years ago, you were using FTP to move all those files. So if you made a change, you had to remember which files you changed and pushed those. I can't tell you how many versions of a file was final file, just in case, final file.
I think we've all been there doing our own source control with our own folders.
Yes, yes. So GitHub makes that super easy to iterate and to roll back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to go ahead and cue you up for another technology that both of us are really big fans of, who just happen to be awesome sponsors of the podcast as well. Of course, I'm talking about Quez Forms, and they go by the tagline of build any form on any platform with low code. And this is really neat because you can build your form however you're doing it right now. If you're using vanilla JavaScript or Vue or React, doesn't matter. You include a little bit of Quez Forms logic into your app. You can add validation. It does spam protection, all sorts of stuff. It's really become the easiest way for me to handle form submissions in projects that I work on going forward. So Quez Forms is just really neat. I highly encourage people to check it out. But if you want a little more details, Amy is actually using that as part of her tech stack on her site. So Amy, do you want to tell us a little bit about how you're handling submissions on your site?
So this is another example of Amy tries all the technologies. She finally lands on one.
I feel like that should be an upcoming episode or like a series on YouTube.
It could be easily. So with forms, when I was using Gatsby, I was using Netlify's form experience. And that was great. It worked perfect. And it was just built into the hosting platform. But since I moved to Vercel, I didn't have that option anymore. And I was trying to figure out, okay, how do I process these forms? And the forms that I'm running is just like a contact form and then being able to sign up for an email newsletter. So I tried a few options, but I was either having to hand roll my own or there were issues with spam and the fact that it was letting too much spam through. So I finally landed on Quez Forms. And the great thing is their lowest tier lets you have 3 sites. So we're actually running the Self-Teach Me site and the Compress site off the single account. And you can have multiple people invited. So James is invited to the compress.fm form section, but he does not have access to the Self-Teach Me section. Then I'm using Zapier to connect those form entries to ConvertKit. And I also get a Slack message if somebody submits something. So that's pretty cool.
It's really neat. Yeah, I might go ahead and move my personal contact to Quez and leverage that. I'm using a Netlify serverless function as well. Or no, you were just using regular Netlify forms, which is baked into the platform.
That's right.
I wrote a serverless function. Right. But I get a little bit of spam. So I would love to take advantage of the spam features that Quez has to offer.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I don't think I've gotten any spam.
Yeah.
Since I went over. Actually, let me take a hot minute and explain how it works on the back end. I just say, hey, I have a contact form. And then it will tell me, include, you can actually run an NPM package, include this package on the page, and then add this class to the form. So it's, I'm just adding a class to the form. And then on each form element, I have to make sure that there's a name and there's some kind of validation. So mm-hmm. I would say, hey, I want this to be required or whatnot. And that's it. It just works. So the fact that I can add a class and just say, these are the fields, and it works is amazing.
Quez does validation front end and back end. So we've probably been there before. Like if you were to create your own serverless function to handle the form submission, if you do form validation on the front end, it doesn't actually protect you because someone could just send a HTTP request directly to your server. So Quez, when you write those rules, they're actually doing validation front end and back end to make sure that the stuff that you want to have be there is actually in the right format.
Man, it's just such a great tool. So special thanks again to Quez Forms, not only for making a great product, but also for sponsoring Compress.fm. Okay, so we talked a little bit about marketing in terms of the fact that I have Zapier connecting to ConvertKit for handling emails, but I also wanted to point out Write Message, and I'm not using it to its fullest potential, but this is just one of those services I've had my eye on for a while that's very interesting to me. So if you go to my website, selfteach.me, there's a pop-up at the bottom, and I don't even know what it says.
I'd like to get to know you better.
I'd like to get to know you better. If you go to my site, there's a pop-up at the bottom. It says, I'd like to get to know you better. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself? And if you answer this, it just goes through a series of questions. It asks you if you're a designer, a developer, or if you wear both hats. And if you answer one question, I think there's maybe three or four in the series. But the idea is that you get tagged in ConvertKit based on your answers, and then I will send you emails based on what's interesting to you. So if you come to my site and you're a developer and you really don't care about design, that's fine. I just want to make sure that I'm serving you better. And so I'm only going to include developer related resources in the newsletters that you get. Vice versa, if you're in design or if you're into both, you get everything. So the cool part about this marketing piece is that a lot of people will tell you to niche down. And while that's important, why do you think you should have a focus? Right Message talks about more niching down in marketing instead of maybe your offerings. So for me, I'm serving two groups of people, which can be confusing. But for marketing purposes, I'm only serving one because I've tailored that to meet your needs individually. And on some of the higher tiers with Right Message, you can even change the messaging on your website. So right now I have build with confidence. But if you're a designer, I could say design with confidence. Or if you're a developer, I could say develop with confidence. So that when you come to the site, you feel like I'm talking directly to you.
That's actually really interesting. And I'm so glad that we get to have the opportunity to learn from each other on this. Because looking at the show notes, you've got in there Right Message. And I was just like, you just want to talk to people the right way. Like, I had no idea that that actually had a technology behind it. And I've seen the pop-up on your site. I haven't actually interacted with it until now, but that's really cool. Again, there's so many different technologies out there. If you do some experimenting, if you look forward to your upcoming playlist on YouTube of Try All the Things, maybe one day, but if you search for a problem that you have, it's likely that either there's a blog post or video or a tool that will help you solve those problems.
That's right. And the guy behind it is named Brennan Dunn, and he has some great resources out there on ConvertKit and Drip. Both are two email service providers, and just really how to target your marketing for the people that you're serving. And again, it's not done in an effort to be sleazy, but really in an effort to serve someone better based on what their needs and what their interests are. And we can include links to all of that within the show notes. So one other thing that's a little bit different about this site than, say, some other sites that I've built was I soft launched my website, selfteach.me, way early. So I was super antsy to get off of WordPress and put something new and fresh. So I posted the site without it being finished. There are tons of content holes, placeholder content, there's broken pages, and it really hasn't been that big of a deal until we started doing the podcast and more people have started going to the website. And so I get direct messages all the time saying, did you know that this content's not here or that it has a 500 error? So it's kind of an interesting concept. Obviously, by the time this episode goes live, the intention of hard launching. And if anybody's familiar with Agile, that's kind of an agile way of doing it. You ship before something is ready. That way you can get feedback on it. And the good thing is it allowed me to move a little bit faster. It allowed me to move off of WordPress, because if that were the case, I would still have a WordPress site up and I would still have this local build on my machine. So it allowed me to move a little bit faster, but it does have the potential to cause problems when it creates a bad user experience, which in turn creates a bad first impression. So I think that there's a balance there. If you're considering a soft launch model, there's a balance there between launching too early and then launching too late.
Yeah. I feel like it almost can be like a conversation starter. Like if someone goes from your site to tag you on Twitter or comment on something you put on Twitter, now you get the ability to drive that conversation and say, thank you so much for your feedback. That will be fixed. And that's kind of a cool interaction. Now, balancing that with the people who had a bad experience and then never came back, that's something that I think that's have to keep in mind. But I love the idea of we get stuff out there and then improve on it. That's a lot of what my advice is in content creation, is get started, do something. It's going to be not necessarily shitty, but it's not going to be the thing that you wanted to do. It's going to get you on the path to getting to the point that you want to be. We talked about a lot of different really cool technologies. Thinking back to what you've used and the pros and cons of what you've done so far, are there any things that you would change if you were to build your site again today?
Yeah, I think right now I'm really happy with the tech stack. I talked about some of the iterations that I went through, so I feel like I've honed that in. But a huge thing that I would do differently is reduce the barrier to entry. And let me explain what I mean. in a roundabout way. I was listening to a podcast by Tim Ferriss and Greg McCowan. He wrote Essentialism, but he has a new book that just came out called Effortless. And he was talking about his son being an Eagle Scout and having this Eagle Scout project do. All of his peers were creating these elaborate projects. And he's looking at this, wondering how he's ever going to finish. These projects seem huge and complicated. So they start to have this conversation of what he can dial back. And they realize that was the wrong way to approach the conversation. Instead of looking at the top notch and saying, what do I need to dial back? Starting at the bottom and saying, what's the bare minimum that I need to deliver? Mm-hmm. So with my site, for example, in reducing the barrier to entry, I have an element on the homepage where it has 1, 2, 3, where I want to have 3 key elements where I funnel people into my site, like what they need, whether that's CSS, whether that's the entire app experience, or maybe it's a ultimate beginner experience. So there's 3 different options there. Well, I've got to create content for all 3 of those things. And that's been a huge hurdle for me to get over, is what do each of those experiences look like? Whereas if I had just started at the bottom and said, what's the bare minimum that I need to do? Well, really, I just want this to be a blog. Starting out, I don't need to have these customized marketing experiences based on where my user is. Yes, I can build those in, but I don't have to launch with that or even soft launch with that. I can come back and do that later. So I just feel like by including that on the site, I made it harder for myself from the beginning, and it didn't have to be that difficult.
Yeah, that's fair. I think a lot of the stuff that I want to continue to improve on in stuff that I build or things that I do, it's just, again, using my own advice, get started and then add more, do better later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I think the last piece is, as much as I enjoyed Tailwind, and I really do enjoy Tailwind and working with it, I think I might use Style Components instead. And that mostly comes from the fact that I'm approaching my site from a more traditional standpoint, and that my most humble way of saying it, I'm a CSS wizard. It's like my superpower. And so Style Components fits into that, and Tailwind, it's abstracting that wizardry.
You heard it here first, folks. Amy is a CSS wizard.
I'm magical like that. Yeah, so it just kind of made more sense for me with Style Components. It's more of what I'm used to. I don't hate on Tailwind. I'm not saying that Tailwind is worse. I'm just saying for me and where I'm at, it fits better.
Yeah, I think that's a good clarification on all the things that we talked about, right? Like, we each have our preferences from the stuff that we've done, and we have reasons for why, but that doesn't mean that those are the same reasons that other people should and will have either. So make sure that you give things a try and experience it for yourselves as well. I think we are ready to get close to wrapping up the show. And as we do that, we've got 2 sections that we like to hit. So the first is the grab bag section, where we take questions from friends and strangers of the internet alike. And the first one here is from Matias. Matias actually runs a podcast that I was a guest on in Spanish. Made me incredibly nervous. It was a really cool experience, but I was incredibly nervous. But anyway, Matias asks, since you were talking about sanity and James has recently discovered the Nirvana was felt, maybe we'll do an episode on that sometime in the future. How can you deliver rich experience like MDX with sanity and SvelteKit? SvelteKit is... Well, let's start with Svelte. Svelte is a framework kind of competing with the SPA frameworks, the single page application frameworks that we hear about, Angular, React, Vue. Svelte is kind of the new kid on the block. It's really nice. It's a simple syntax. I would love to do an episode to talk about my experience and what I've enjoyed so far. SvelteKit is kind of a layer on top of that that is similar to what Next.js is, with the ability to do server-side rendering, some of the features that we talked about before. So I think the answer to this is, how can you get that really cool experience with MDX, Sanity, and SvelteKit? I think if you're using Sanity to all the things that you talked about before, Amy, you get the equivalent of MDX, those custom components, with portable text in Sanity. So again, that gives you the ability to define, here's what a custom thing would look like that I want to be able to add into the WYSIWYG editor of Sanity. And then you can style that thing in whatever framework you're using and have that thing look exactly like you want. So I think the answer here is that you still don't really need MDX in that case. You go with Sanity, you do your portable text, you customize whatever components you want, and then pull them into SvelteKit. If you wanted to specifically do MDX and SvelteKit, that is not an answer I could give right now. So I don't know what that integration looks like, but I know with portable text and Sanity, you could absolutely do what you're talking about with SvelteKit. And just one last clarification, SvelteKit is in beta as of the time that we're talking. So keep an eye out for that to go from beta to not beta, whatever that progression is. And the next question, another one from Cam, the developer. We've had lots of questions from Cam. Thank you so much for all the questions and the support. We genuinely appreciate that. And Cam asks, is it easy to switch from React to Next? So Amy, I'm going to let you jump in on that one.
I'm so glad that you asked this, Cam, because I think that this is confusing for people. And I'm glad that this kind of gives us the opportunity to clarify. So Next is still making use of React. It's a React framework. And the benefit to using Next over, say, Create React App, that's really what you're replacing. You're not replacing React, you're replacing Create React App, is that it gives you a different starting point. So as we're talking about static generated content and server-side rendered content, so sometimes you'll hear that as SSG or SSR, Next.js gives you those items out of the box. You don't have to worry about the backend components. It also takes care of routing. You don't have to use, say, React Router for that. It just handles a lot of these things. So to use Next.js, you really do need to know React. But when you're talking about page components in Next.js, it's just a React component and you're importing other React components into your page. So the two work hand in hand.
Yeah, you can do everything in React and then you can do other stuff. And then some of the stuff is taken care of for you. Like you said, if you want to create a new page in Next.js, you don't need to configure a router. You just create a component file and put it in a pages directory. If you want a serverless function, we've talked about me using Netlify functions for my newsletter sign up or for my contact and email. If you wanted a serverless function in Next.js, you just put a file inside of the API directory. So this thing's just being done for you. It takes care of some of the work. You can do everything that you would do in regular React and then some, and some of the stuff you don't even have to do yourself. So I think that's the big takeaway. Having the React experience definitely makes getting into Next.js pretty straightforwardly. That's not a word, but it makes it just, it just makes sense. Like it clicked with me immediately. I know that's not going to be the same for everyone necessarily, but it seemed like a really nice transition from just Create React App to Next.js for me.
The last segment of the episode, we like to cover picks and plugs. So this is generally something that we pick and something that we want to plug. A pick is usually a product or a service that we like, and a plug is something that generally we've made. So James, what's your pick and plug for this week?
So my pick, this is actually a really, really special one. This is a book that is from one of my best friends, Reggie Ford. We met in college and have been best friends for however many years that is now. And he has a very interesting background with lots of different traumatic experiences in his past. And so he had been kind of writing down notes of things that he would remember or stories. And he ended up putting them into this book, which is called PTSD, which stands for Perseverance Through Severe Dysfunction. And the tagline here is Breaking the Curse of Intergenerational Trauma as a Black Man in America. Now, this is a little bit serious, but I do want to encourage people, if you're just looking for a book to understand some things that you probably never even imagined. His life, so many different things, should just be a movie in themselves or ridiculous scenes in a movie. It's just really interesting to get an eye-opening insight into someone else's life, to another person's world, things that you may not have ever thought of. So if you're looking for something to gain a little bit of perspective on life and a little bit of exposure into some things that go on with other people that you may not have ever thought about, highly recommend it. I got to read a really early on version. I haven't read the finished edited version, so I'm looking forward to actually having the physical copy in my hand. It's in pre-order now, but highly recommended. Again, Reggie, one of my best friends, actually is in Nashville, wrote his first book. So I highly recommend people checking out. And then for plugs, I'm going to plug my YouTube channel. I've had a big couple of weeks on YouTube. I went from about 30,000 to about 60,000 subscribers in a month or so, and it's still climbing, and it's just been really, really fun. So if you're interested in more video content related to some of the topics that we talk about here, go and check me out at James Q Quick on YouTube.
Awesome. My pick for the week is a Road ID. I love to run, and so this is an ID bracelet that you can wear while you're running, and it says your name, your emergency contact information, and if you're allergic to anything. I said a bracelet. I actually originally had a bracelet. You can get it as a tag on your shoe, but I also have it as a metal tag on my Apple Watch band. So it's not something additional that I have to put on, but I believe in this product so much. One, their customer service was fantastic. When we moved, I needed to update the contact information on it, and I accidentally had it sent to the old address, and they sent me a new one for free, even though it was my fault for putting the wrong address in there. But two, I just believe that this saves lives. My dad actually was running a couple years ago and tripped and fell, and because he had his on, people were able to call my mom and let her know that we're calling an ambulance, all these. I mean, he ended up being fine, but it just would have been a much worse situation if he wasn't wearing it.
That is amazing. It's only like
$30.
Yeah. I had no idea this existed. This is great.
Yeah. So I actually have mine on all the time because it's on my Apple Watch, but beforehand I would wear it anytime I went running. So my plug for the week, I want to plug my YouTube channel that's Self Teach Me. And I've been working on a series on building a custom audio player. It's a series. The first video actually is just wrapped up. It's a long video. It's over an hour long. It's the longest YouTube video I've ever put together. But in my opinion, at least the content is there because we talk about not only building it on the JavaScript side, but also how to style it. And in the upcoming videos, we'll be talking about if you have multiple players on a page, how do you have one player stop another player that might be playing, and how do you abstract this if you want to create a custom library of hooks to control other audio players or release those hooks as an NPM package.
All right. So Amy, thanks for sharing all of that about your site. I love the conversations about trying out technology, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't, and then making informed decisions about that. So hopefully it was helpful for people. In the next episode, we are going to start to talk about design fundamentals. I think this is something that we both really enjoy. I think Amy has a lot of experience. I've got more of the newcomer to design experience. So I think we'll have a good perspective to share on this. So we're going to do two episodes on these. So keep an eye out for them coming out in the future. But thanks everyone for checking out the podcast. That's all we got.